It's the end of the year in a nice, somewhat arbitrary place to see what's come and what we think of it now. What did you miss? What did we find intriguing? It's 2022 in a nutshell in this episode.
An elevator tape projection.
Happy New Year, everyone. It's Taking It Down, a podcast where we cordially unpack TV and film for our progressive, busy Alabama people and beyond. With so much to stream and so much to read and see, we let you know what to watch and where to watch it. I'm the host, Blaine Duncan. Taking It Down exists because I have a lot of thoughts about TV, movies, books, and music. I have an English degree. I am a teacher. So I try to put all that together for an okay little podcast that's worthy of your time. I was once a classic kid who grew up in front of a television set, and I always loved visiting a movie theater. But my ideas won't be the only ones that guide the show. Every week, we have Mr. Adam Morrow, who's an erudite traveling musician with a penchant for literature. We got Donovan Reinwald, a media specialist, who's done some teaching himself. He's got an encyclopedic knowledge on film and more, as well as Natalie Morrow, who's also done quite a bit of teaching. She is the first person to ask about Santa. Fantasy Santa. Did I say Santa just then? She's the first person to ask about Santa, though that's come and gone. Fantasy, sci-fi, comics, trashy reality TV, and Beyonce. From us, you'll get the obvious, but you'll also get some of the obscure. Here are our co-hosts and their hellos. First, if you missed U2 at all, this guy can recap all you need to know U2 related for 2022. It's Adam Morrow.
I could. So could you. That could be something we talk about. I mean, Bono's book, that's going to be on some list, right?
It could be. We'll find out soon. Up next, this is the gentleman. His top 10 New England tourist destinations are just old-ass homes. It's Donovan Reinwald.
Great to be here, Blaine.
And it's true.
Yeah, that's totally true. Lastly, she...
Just go to old house museums.
Lastly, she's finished wrapping gifts, but god damn it, she has no energy to play with her Christmas toys because of it. It's Natalie Morrow.
Here I am with my Christmas socks. The only toys I got.
No relation to Adam Morrow. We're back. We're on Tuesday. It's Tuesday. We're back. How was Christmas for everyone?
It was great.
Cold. Very cold. I don't have balls anymore because it's so cold. It fell off. That was crass. I'll edit that out.
I was going to ask, did Grandma shoot them off?
Yeah. The tornado didn't get them.
Yeah, I said it at the top. End of the year stuff's really arbitrary because what is time? It's such a man-made thing.
I got to tell you, especially now, as I was getting ready for this episode, I thought of a few records specifically. I was like, I'm going to bring that up. And then looked it up and I was like, oh, that came out a year, 2 years ago.
I was hoping you'd say 5 years ago.
That it's the pandemic is the line in the sand.
I did that, I think, last year or maybe the year before with Lovecraft Country, where I was convinced it had come out in that year. Yeah. And it was one of my big disappointments of the year. And Blaine's like, you know that was last year, right? Like, that was last August.
You know, the Alabama take itself is just a thank you to everyone. We've really hit some high points overall. It seems like every year we grow a little. Just to recap, we've got 6 podcasts in production. We've gotten way more people who follow us, respond to us, talk to us. The site is getting more views and all that. And that's, you know, that's all bullshit buzzwords. But I do bring them up just to say thanks. And hopefully that's translating into people liking what we're doing. We like what we're doing. I think we'd be doing it even if only one or two people were attentive. We tend to go broad and then narrow it down. Is this the year that we'll reference and say, oh yeah, that's back when Twitter was working?
I thought about that when you were doing your introduction. I thought about how year-end lists are kind of coming under fire as a construct, but also specifically, I mean, you're making an expression. I think people we had a lot of fun doing them for years, and it seems like people are more likely now, even like your Pitchfork, I'm sure, still does a ranked list, but a lot of music journalists will just say, like, here's the records I liked, versus arguing over a 1 through 100 spot or whatever.
Oh, okay.
But
I haven't seen much of that.
Really? It seems less dominant now that, and maybe it's because of where I'm reading, that people are interested in ranked list, which we're not doing a ranked list this time. It's just kind of an assortment of the things that we liked, if I'm understanding correctly. Right. But even like when Spotify Wrapped comes out, it is often, a lot of people engage with it and it's fun, but it seems like the blowback gets a little stronger every year. the big technology. Is 2020 the year that big technology really starts to fracture from, like, we need to question these things, to Twitter's imploding, Spotify is weak on its feet? What do you guys think? Is this only because we're hyper-connected?
Elon's doing his best to make this the year we question everything about technology.
I wrote about it recently, how I think that the end of Twitter would be a good thing because it splinters your information, and I think that's a good thing. You do get your news from journalists, and you do get your friends' quote-unquote tweets from friends, and having two or three different social media sites to get these things might help you slow down and think, I don't have to reply to that. Or not that any of you guys have ever been the type to reply in a negative manner, but there's so much of that on Twitter where it's just so quick. Your instant reaction is anger. It might not hurt to say, I've got to close this app and open another one in order to read a particular thing, they're not tweets anymore if you're using a different app, but you get the idea.
There is research that shows anger is the feeling most likely to go viral.
It is, because it sells. I mean, that's what sells. That's what it used to be, sex sells, but now it's anger. That's what gets the retweets. That's what gets the reactions. And
what about sexy anger?
That's my favorite.
Didn't we have that? Aren't we covering that when we talk about She-Hulk?
That's pretty good, Donovan.
Thank you.
You know, I can see some of this going either way, but I do hope 2022 is the last of crypto. And I'll say why. I got so tired over the past 4 years of every news organization, and I do mean every, trying to push crypto or at least talk about it or look relevant. Here I am. I just want to read about Johnny Depp and Amber Heard, and I have to wade through all this toxic crypto shit.
I thought for sure you're going to say, I hope this is the end of crypto because I got so screwed on my investments.
Blaine's losing his money the old-fashioned way by betting on football.
Exactly.
Good for you.
If crypto's going out.
At least you're not Tom Brady, who made a commercial with his now ex-wife talking about going all in on crypto.
Are NFTs done too?
Oh, God.
I think maybe hopefully Trump killed those for us. Who knew?
I'm
so tired of that shit too.
The crypto I could kind of understand, but the NFT thing, it's been explained to me. I don't get it at all.
It feels like a fancy word for JPEG.
Yeah.
I don't see the value in it. I kind of understand what it is, but there's no value in it to me. And if there is, it's stupid. Feck. Okay, so we opened it up. Let's do a roundtable kind of thing. And we'll just go around and you give me, I'll open the floor really, but you recount some of your best, worst, favorite, kind of what I was doing, just 2022 shit. You loved it, you hated it, you enjoyed it, you relished it, you want to remember it even more, experiences, whatever.
Are we going to start things that we loved? Or are we going to kind of just
whatever you want.
Let it all fall out?
Table's open.
Man. I feel lucky to go first here because I think obviously we talk almost weekly about things that we enjoy, so we probably are going to say a lot of the same stuff. So I get to not be an echo here. I'll start with Severance. We talk a lot about TV. I think Severance probably ended up being my favorite show that came out this year. I'd have to think a little bit harder about that. But man, Apple TV in general seemed to almost take the place of, not take the place because HBO is still doing excellent work, but you know, they have a pretty good batting average going, and they built that reputation a lot this year, and Severance was their finest, and I think it was the finest show this year.
They tend not to have duds.
Yeah. The opposite of the Netflix carpet bombing technique where you just kind of hope that, you know, we're finishing up making our way through the most recent season of The Crown, which has also been great, but at times you watch that and you think, man, how is this the same under the same umbrella as some of these other shows that I scroll by to get to this program. Not the case with Apple TV, and Severance was really great, and I can't wait for more.
I'll echo that. It had a great, Adam Scott was kind of, not a breakout, because he's had breakout performances, but just the way he had to be two different characters throughout that series was, he was excellent.
I think, but the acting, the stylized nature of everything, the everything slightly off kind of. And in a year that people were asked to come back to work you know, by and large, mm-hmm. If they weren't already. But the it seems like we're at a I thought about this the other day, and I don't want to sound overly dramatic about it, but there are moments in labor history, right, where something changes, and I feel like we're at a tipping point, possibly, where we rethink our relationship to work and to the economy and to the wealthy and all these things. And severance is asking, you know, happens to be asking all of the right questions at the right time. And I love it when art does that.
I have a personal favorite of just an experience of 2022, not 2020, 2022. If this was this kind of was the year where it seemed like things opened up a little bit more and music came a little bit more back in my life. So I saw Dinosaur Jr. play outside the Hartford Old State House back in late August, early September. I can't remember. And it was like the weirdest advertised show I've ever, like my friend who lives in Indianapolis texted me and was like, you have to go to this. And for a while, I wasn't sure if it was actually happening because there was like no social media presence or anything. But I went and it ended up being, I've never seen Dinosaur Jr. before. And that was very exciting to see them. And then the venue was absolutely great because the Old State House is an 18th century, I think it's 18th century, late 18th century pile of bricks designed by, I think it was Bullfinch, but I'm not sure. And so that was to your back, and then you had Dinosaur Jr. in front of you, and it was cool. It was all outdoors, open air.
That's awesome. They put on a good show.
They put on a really good show.
One of my highlights over the last couple of years is I've gotten really into podcasts, which I don't, is it weird to talk about podcasts on a podcast?
I don't think so.
I've always wanted to start a podcast and call it This Pod Sucks, where we just rate and review other podcasts. I think I've told you this idea.
It's great.
But there's one that I really enjoyed. I think you guys would like it. It's called Films to be Buried with Brett Goldstein, who plays Roy Kent in Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
He's the host. He's been doing this podcast for years, but essentially he just brings on actors, comedians, directors, all these entertainment folks, and just asks them about movies, their favorite movies, you know, the most influential movies, their least liked movies. It's just been really fun to listen to kind of, you listen to it and you think, oh yeah, I've seen that movie, that was fun. It's fun to kind of revisit those things, but then to also hear about things that, you know, you haven't seen, you haven't even heard of, or you haven't thought about in a really long time. It's just been a really fun way to kind of pass the time, whether if you're just looking for something in the car or on a run or sitting in the kitchen cooking dinner. It's brought a lot of joy to me, and I think you guys should listen to it if you haven't.
I had read that he did a podcast, but I didn't follow up and figure out what it was.
It's really funny. It can be a little irreverent, some of the questions that he asks, but it's always, you know, in good humor. It's got a good heart. You know, they'll ask, he always prefaces, like, I don't like to talk negative, so I'm going to ask you really quickly about what your least favorite movie is, and then we're moving on. And it's all just, he keeps it very positive and light, and it's been really great.
That's cool.
I'll kind of echo what Donovan was talking about with the return of concerts, and the music industry at large seems to be cooking again. We went and saw The Smile. This was recently in New Orleans at the Orpheum, which is a shockingly small theater to see two members of Radiohead play. And I went in more or less cold. I hadn't spent a ton of time with that record. And I don't know, have you guys listened much to it or seen their late night performances or anything?
Just listen to it.
I've listened to it.
Listen to the album a little, yeah.
It's an odd thing to go and see members of one of your favorite bands ever. You know, like if I went to a Radiohead show, I know every lyric, every melody, every guitar hook, every, like all this stuff is, I mean, all of us do, right? It's so like programmed in our brains, it's soundtracked parts of our lives. But to go and see those same people making brand new music was almost like experiencing what makes them so good for the first time. You know, you always wonder, like, would you know early on if you saw this great musician what they were capable of? And to see them present entirely new stuff that I wasn't familiar with, yet still had me on the edge of my seat, was pretty stunning. I mean, I think that's one of the best concerts that I've ever seen. And it was just nice to experience something like that again. You know, like a big light show. Same, we saw The War on Drugs there as well back in June, I think, or May. That was just nice to see an arena rock style thing again. But to see these guys, especially kind of up close, was awesome.
You went to New Orleans like 23 times this year.
Right. Well, it became, we went three or four, you know, we have friends down there, and it's a little too far away to do super regularly from the Shoals, but you know, of the cities that I can drive to in a half a day, that's not a bad one. It was interesting to see these guys in a decidedly not Radiohead kind of atmosphere. Like, I'm not sure that the show sold out until probably the time that they started playing. Like, there were probably walk-up tickets available, whereas in other cities, wow, they were like on the resale market for $500-$600, and this was one of the smaller venues that they played on the run. And it's just kind of neat. Most musicians seem to kind of get off on like, oh, we're in New Orleans for 24 hours, here's all this history, yeah, and bring a pretty good show. So that part was cool. It's an interesting place to kind of, if you're not seeing, which I'm not really interested in seeing that much, you know, quote unquote New Orleans music, if you're going to see like an indie rock show or whatever, it's not a bad place to go.
I was looking back over like lists, various lists that I keep. Like, I keep a list on Goodreads of like what I've read this, mm-hmm, year, and Letterboxd, I track my movies. Mm-hmm. And I was struck by how little I engaged with 2022 in books and movies. I don't think I read anything that was published this year. And I watched very few movies that came out this year. But I did interact with 2022 through television. And as far as television goes, I think prequels kind of dominated the year. And they were all pretty good and made me excited to visit those worlds again. I'm talking about The Lord of the Rings, The Rings of Power. Mm. That was exciting. House of the Dragon. And then Andor, which kind of made me love Star Wars, mm-hmm, again. And I was getting a little bored, mm-hmm, with it.
I'm with you. The Rings of Power and House of the Dragon being out at the same time. I love when the entertainment industry kind of decides to like, it'll be best for us if we compete with each other. You know what I mean? Like, let's having one of those, a new episode every week, was awesome. And it was fun, yeah, to have, especially an HBO show that was kind of appointment viewing for us on Sunday night or as early Mondays we could get to it.
Yeah, I came home. I wouldn't watch it on Sunday nights, but I'd come home. Monday's my late day at work. I'd come home and watch, like, I know the thing I'm going to do tonight is watch House of the Dragon, and it's probably going to be pretty good. That was fun. I think the one that I was anticipating House of the Dragon and Rings of Power, and I think they both pretty much held up to my expectations. But the one that really surprised me was Andor. Mm-hmm. It seemed, and I think part of what was surprising in that, especially with recent Star Wars, it seems like you really can't do anything but talk about Star Wars with Star Wars.
Right.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard to nod to any real world or broader social thing. It's just Star Wars, and Andor seemed so determined to be relevant this year.
I did too. Yeah, that's a good one.
Did any of you engage with the new Beyonce this year? Was I the only one?
Not at all.
Because, oh my God.
Yeah, I didn't either.
It's so good, and I'm so disappointed in all of you.
It's also one of those albums that I didn't see a lot of talk about anywhere, not just here in our show, but like it was a huge album, but also not talked about.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting because I think when the single came out earlier this year, I guess it was Break My Soul, it didn't get great reviews. Like, a lot of people were like, you know, she's doing something different. It's a little like housey. We're not into it. And I kind of felt, I kind of agreed. Like, I was like, this is fine, but it's not great. And then she put the whole record out, and as a collective, it is such a good record. And I think that too many people are talking about this new Taylor Swift.
Yeah, that was where the attention went.
Yeah, and I felt a little, this is gonna be a dumb thing to say in front of Adam, but I felt how people felt about getting that U2 record on their phone. That's how I feel about Taylor Swift, because I just can't avoid it. Like, I don't want to engage with it, but it is everywhere. It's all, yeah, over the radio. It's all people can talk about. Whereas only maybe in the last week have I heard one of the new Beyonce songs on the radio, but those weren't radio friendly. Like, there were edits that had to have been made, huh, to get any of those songs on the radio. But it's been a weird, like, why isn't anybody talking about this? Because I think that record is so good.
Can I just say, Bono did nothing wrong.
The collective feeling of frustration that idiots had when they were forced to listen to U2, because they're idiots. It was great. But I feel that way about all this Taylor Swift attention. I think
it does seem
bogus.
Like the pushback on Taylor Swift has people who didn't have opinions before this year developed anti-Taylor feelings.
Yeah. Totally.
Fortunately, my head is far enough under the sand that I still have no opinion on it.
Yeah.
I've been fascinated with Lane Kiffin's burgeoning relationship with Taylor Swift.
And look, she's taking over this conversation, too. This is about Beyonce, you guys.
She talked with Martin McDonagh, which was weird.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah.
Beyonce is an interesting career moment for me because it seems like the pinnacle of her career, maybe, depending on how that shakes out, is the thing that I scroll past on Netflix all the time, the Coachella performance. Mm. Right, like that was such a good career-spanning thing. And even beyond, just as a piece of entertainment, it's incredible. Everything feels like a postscript to that now, which isn't fair at all to her, because you shouldn't be draw a line in the sand on somebody's creativity like that, because it seems like she's trying even more now to do outside-the-box stuff.
Yeah, and I think I agree with that. Up until this last her album. I think that's accurate to say until you get to Renaissance. And then it truly is a Renaissance. Like, I think that that's a new, the direction is so new, but still harkens back to some of her older kind of themes and things. I just think it's worth the attention and then make an opinion. Maybe still you think that way. That's fine. But I think it deserves the attention and it deserves the listening. So I think it's so good. And also I have to throw in that I watched the Harry and Meghan documentary that was put on Netflix.
Yeah.
And there's just one scene where they're sitting at the table and Meghan gets a text and she says, oh, it's from Beyonce.
That's wild.
And Prince Harry puts his hands up in the air and goes, oh my God, shut up. And just saying, he respects her, everybody, you know, that's it.
Well, everybody
she's
does
she's
at this
the queen,
point, right?
She's the queen.
Well, it's with her, it seemed like she was on top of the world when she could put a single out and it was on the radio all the time, right?
Yeah.
And it's like great radio music because I never got tired of hearing them, and it's head and shoulders above the other folks putting stuff out. And now that radio continues to just slide way into the gutter of who listens to it really anymore, even though she was the one who put out the Midnight record and was like the radio head of the, not to keep bringing up old Tom and the Boys, but I remember when that came out and how exciting that was, even as like, not somebody who seeks out her records necessarily, but it was a cool moment. And now it seems like old Taylor's kind of taken the momentum from her.
My complaint about the social media aspect is that, especially when it came to Taylor Swift and Harry Styles to a degree, every Instagram story for like 15 or 20 in a row that you'd click on had those albums or links to those songs. And I'm like, I know about that. Tell me something I don't know. Give me the DIY artist or the Beyonce album that slipped by me a little, or take your pick, or something I haven't heard from 1988 or whatever. You know, it's when everyone's posting the same thing for an artist that's already getting billions of downloads and sales, that doesn't do anything. I think that's a bad use of social media.
And here we thought the monoculture was dead.
Well, it's not quite, is it? At least not on, I think no. Instagram, it can be, especially with music.
The Harry Styles record in particular, it seems like everybody liked that. Like, no matter how they were coming to it as, you know, fans of pop or people who were like, well, it was pretty good for a pop star, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Like it was just everywhere.
I forgot that Harry Styles record came out this year because it's the first Harry Styles thing I've listened to.
Exactly.
And I thought it was fine. Like, I didn't love it. I didn't feel strong feelings of revulsion, but I also wasn't like, this is a pop masterpiece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was just kind of fun.
I thought it was fun. And
but everyone had to have an opinion.
Right. I don't have anything against Harry Styles or Taylor Swift or Beyonce, of course, but I'm complaining, I guess, more about how we all probably, you know, take to social media and stuff sometimes.
Well, especially the Instagram pushing reels so much this year and TikTok being a thing, like you really heard. I mean, there's people who are huge because of TikTok now, musically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh,
which is,
yeah.
Have you seen those clips of people at concerts and the band is playing a full song, but the crowd only joins in for 15 seconds of what they know
really?
From TikTok? Yeah. It's really like sad and embarrassing.
I would.
That's great.
I'd like to see that. It's sad, embarrassing, but also a bit funny in a way. My big 2022 broad general thing is going to be my love for reading. Sometimes it just fluctuates. It ebbs and flows. But around October, I started reading Fast and Furious. Not the books, Fast and Furious.
the novelization.
The novelizations of Fast. No, I just want to shout out one quick 2022 book, and that's Demon Copperhead. It's 545 pages, but it is never slow, never boring. It's so good. I've got about 90 pages left, and I love it. Related to it's not the right word, but I connected with it so much. It's Barbara Kingsolver. She has a clear sense of how her character should sound on the page, and she nails this guy. It's so good. Anyway, let's take a break, and on the back half, I'm going to present my favorite / best sort of loved television shows of the year. Back from a break, and thanks. Coming soon on the website, you will see top 10 television shows from the Alabama Take. That's something I do every year. If you haven't seen it, visit the site soon. Well, I usually count them down, and my qualifications or the rubric I kind of use is, did I like it? Did it affect me? And did I think it was just good in a sense of well done and put together? Maybe it's more or less my top 10 favorites. My television watching got really sporadic this year. If you hear something missing, I bet I just didn't watch it or didn't finish it because of this or that. I'd go on bursts where I'd watch a lot of television, and then I'd go 3 or 4 days without watching any. Number 10 was Barry's season on HBO.
Hey, that did happen this year.
It did. March or April, yeah. I think. Third season, Donovan, am I right about that?
Third season.
Fourth, I think, supposed to be its last.
Barry's doing fine.
Yeah, well, Barry is the... It's a premise you wouldn't think could last more than a season, but they continue to do quite well.
Also featuring the girl that was in eighth grade, whose name I forgot.
That's right.
She was really great in that.
Yeah, she did become a character in Barry's new season. Number 9, Blackbird from Apple TV Plus. Bit of a jail drama, bit of a serial killer drama, but also drama. It wasn't crime thriller or anything. There was just some dramatic aspects to that were really moving.
Was this the one you compared to Mindhunter?
Yeah. Okay. Yes, it definitely had those vibes, but also prodded some deep emotions, I think. It's good. Number 8, Donovan, you'll have thoughts. The Patient from Hulu.
Mm.
We like...
You want it darker.
Yeah. Yeah, we like that one quite a bit. That's Hulu /FX. You can watch it on Hulu.
Yeah, Steve Carell was... There's like a tenderness and urgency to his performance that he doesn't often get a chance to showcase. I thought he was great in it.
Probably one of his best performances, I guess.
Absolutely.
Gotta be. Number 7, Severance, Apple TV Plus. We talked about that one earlier.
Only number 7, huh?
Yeah, we had heavy hitters this year. 6 from HBO again, We Own This City.
That one was good.
I get that it was a little too concise to be as wonderful as The Wire, sprawling, but it was, I don't know, it felt of the moment and important, and it was good. You couldn't take your eyes away from it. I thought that it was organized well. Number 5, now we may have a lot more viewers for this from the crew here, Euphoria on HBO.
Mmm.
I forgot about that show.
It's hard not to put that one even higher, but wow. It had the masterpiece episode of Rue's Odyssey, trying to escape from drug-addled maniacs.
That was a good one.
So good. The whole season was fantastic. Sometimes it might be recency biased as when some of these drop, and I'm guilty of it. Number 4, it was Andor, Disney Plus.
Yeah.
I'm as shocked as Donovan was earlier. Putting a Star Wars series, which I usually watch for entertainment and fun and spectacle, in the top 5, there's a reason for that. It was worth it. It's worth the time spent and beyond.
It was surprising how much it took stuff that normally I wouldn't care about, like Mon Mothma's political maneuverings, and just made it utterly fascinating.
Yeah, without spoiling anything, we said this seemed to have been what George Lucas should have done in the in episode one, the movie, episode one, The Phantom Menace, mm-hmm. seemed to be. Three, I kind of had to talk myself into this one, but it slowly got more effective and more resonant and just emotional. Was Reservation Dogs on Hulu, its second season?
I'm all caught up on the first season, but I haven't struck out to the second season yet.
We didn't make it that far.
The first couple episodes of season two, I thought, oh, this is fine. This is okay. And then I really got emotionally invested in the more I went. And wow. At first, I thought it was the show that critics were raving about because you never saw these kinds of stories on television, specifically Native American stories. And I thought, the praise is coming from the lack of exposure. And I think that was fair. But then I started seeing the latter episodes, which critics probably had watched way before I. And it was just moving stuff. Number two. Adam, you want to take a guess at number one and two here?
I have no idea.
Really?
I'm getting excited here. What's one and two going to be?
Yeah, Blaine is a maverick.
Number two is The Bear from Hulu.
Oh, man. I should have mentioned that in my roundup, because that was...
Well, here's your chance. That.
Well, it's your list. I don't want to jump in here.
No. This is when you had back spasms. Remember? You watched all this in your back spasm pain glory? You were popping lore tabs and Narcos and Oxy and... I'm just kidding, people. I'm kidding.
This was the year that sleeping on the floor after a show out of town finally caught up to me, and I had to lay on my back and watch TV all day. And it's funny because other folks were like, "Oh, I could only watch one episode a day of The Bear," and mm-hmm. we just destroyed it. I think we watched it in two or three days. We had to pause between blocks of watching, but you know, we always joke about capital S, capital L, serious literature. You know, this was like mm-hmm. serious literature for television kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it featured mm-hmm. Wilco pretty heavily. Mm. If your most tense moment has a tracking shot set to a live Wilco cut, there's a chance your program is going to rocket into my top five. I mean, that's just like 101 how to make me happy.
Friends and critics knocked it a bit for that nice pat ending. Who cares? Nah. The lead up to it was so fun. Numero uno, no guesses of number one. I'm kind of shocked. Well, maybe not. I don't think any of you watched this one either. It's Better Call Saul, its final season. Mm. Yeah, it earned it. Everything came together as you would expect. Well done. Little bit methodical in those last couple episodes, but still, it was just, it's too good not to. Shout out. It's too good not to put it number one. Touching, you know, a lot of these shows all have this loss to them, I think. Almost everyone, I'm looking at the list again, and I would say almost every one of them had this certain loss of humanity or loss of human connection. And it's just, it seemed to be the theme of the year.
I wonder why.
Yeah, well, no Netflix shows made my list this time, and that may be a first.
Interesting. Yeah,
I think that is a first since the 5 years I've been doing this.
Did you watch The Midnight Club? I can't remember.
Watched the first episode, and time kept me away from it. I would have loved to have finished it. Some others, these are not in order, but I might have been talked into putting them at 10 or 9. The English.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that wasn't on your list, just because this may be recency bias, but it popped into my top 10 once I finished it. Mm-hmm. Short, sweet, great performances. Chas Spencer was awesome.
It's amazing. It's so good. Wow. And I've yet to write this up. Who knows? I might change one out. The Righteous Gemstones, I thought, was better than it ever was. Well, I guess it's only two seasons, but better than the first. Welcome to Wrexham.
It's good.
Welcome to Wrexham was a journey.
It was a journey, but it had some good episodes that made it definitely worth mentioning.
I don't mean that negatively.
Yeah.
It was just like that show was one thing in its first episode that it wasn't at all by its final episodes. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of, you know, you kind of went on the trip with them. Yeah. But you're rooting for plucky Super Paul Mullen there.
Of course.
By the end.
House of the Dragon, I thought, was really, really good. Stranger Things 4, I think, took a step back to where it was as a show when it first began. Probably would never make my top 10, but it was worth, I think it's worth mentioning. Winning Time from HBO, the Lakers. It was pretty flawed, but it's still really good. It's just how well done it was. And the last one I'll mention is What We Do in the Shadows. Its most recent season was, I think, the best they've ever done.
It had some really great standout episodes, like the one where they're trying to get baby Colin into a private school.
The fact that Colin was a baby 9 of the 10 episodes was just killer. It was so disconcerting to see it, but it was also hilarious. If you haven't watched What We Do in the Shadows at all, that's really good and worth your time. That's on, you can find it on Hulu. Let's say goodbye to 2022. Any final thoughts? Any hopes, dreams for 2023? Adam's going to be a garden influencer, Kodachrome Gardens. On Instagram.
Reels for all my reels will be Harry Styles and Taylor Swift, so get ready.
Lettuce shots over and over again. Lettuce, lettuce, lettuce.
I'm sorry, but you must have missed the radishes of the winter. Which, by the way, is Michael McDonough's new movie, The Radishes,
radishes
of the Winter.
Radishes of the Winter.
That's it for this year. I know some of you had a horrible 2022. It's, you know, it's our hope. We all have a better 2023. Let's see. We got a lot of coming as far as TV and movies. Some of it's very promising for 2023. We'll likely get into that next week. So thanks for listening. Follow us, talk to us, share us with a friend. If nothing else, you can find the Alabama Take online and on social media. It's a good start for keeping up with all things Alabama Take related and productions. Thanks to you all so much for following us this year. We have a lot of new people joining us on this trip. And it's been a great year for our site and for this podcast, so we hope you continue. Talk to you later.